When our clients feel anxiety, they might describe it as a sort of monster that they're afraid of, or as an enemy that they need to fight against. Neither of which can be especially helpful sometimes, especially when it comes to managing anxiety. So what if we could help clients reframe this perspective? Well, here Dr. Shelley Harrell gets into specific strategies for making the shift.
One of the most important things in working with anxiety is helping clients to change their relationship to anxiety. And I think with any intense emotion, in some ways it's important to make friends with it, you know, to recognize that any emotion is a communication to us. It's a signal to pay attention, to look to what is this trying to tell me? What is this feeling, this emotion, this anxiety trying to tell me about myself, about my relationships, about the world? So the first piece of the work, I think, is to try to, again, make friends with it. I always think about it. I often give this metaphor to clients. A child who is laying in the bed and is scared of the monster under the bed, right? What does the parent do? You know, we might always think that it would be a good idea for the parent to maybe turn the light on, get a flashlight, you know, go down and look under the bed for the monster, right? Rather than sitting in the bed and going, oh my God, the monster's there. If we sit in the bed and don't look at the monster, don't say, hi, monster, what's going on? Then the monster becomes bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, right? But when we kind of turn the light on and really look at what's there, it's then that we can begin to manage how we're going to deal with the monster. If there's a monster there, right? But if there is, how are we going to deal with that monster and communicate with that monster?
That's a helpful metaphor because our client's fear of the anxiety monster is only going to escalate their anxious feelings. So staying with Shelley's analogy for just a moment more, how do we help someone manage this particular kind of monster?
One way of managing anxiety is to find a message and meaning in it. You know, I'm very, I believe in meaning-focused work can be helpful with many issues. I think one of the kind of dynamics that present barriers to managing anxiety for people has to do with kind of focusing on the future or the past, right? And not being able to stay focused in the present, right? So if we think about worry, is focusing our attention on the future. If we think about rumination, it's focusing our attention on the past, right? So worry and rumination both take us out of the present. So I think intervening in ways that help people kind of ground themselves in the moment can reduce anxiety so that we're not kind of living in the future of what's going to happen, oh my goodness, in that worry place, or ruminating, playing over and over in our mind some regretted past situation. You know, this is a metaphor that many people have heard, and it's attributed to Cherokee people. But the story of the two wolves, right? So there's the grandfather is telling his grandson, you know, there's a war going on inside of me between two wolves, and one of the wolves is very, very evil and bad and is filled with anger and arrogance and envy and all these negative emotions. And the other wolf inside of me is really good and filled with empathy and love and the same fight is going on inside of you, my grandson, and going on inside of everyone. The grandfather pauses and the grandson reflects for a moment and asks the grandfather, well, which wolf is going to win, right? If it's a fight, which wolf is going to win? And the grandfather pauses and says, the wolf that you feed. So that idea that It's what we feed that grows. And if we're feeding anxiety and fear and anger, if that's where we're focusing our attention, then that's what's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, right? If we feed kindness and love and self-compassion, right, then that's what's going to get bigger. One of the things that I'll work with clients on is what would your life look like if you fed the good wolf, right? If your energy was put towards feeding the good wolf, what would that entail, right? What would you need to do differently to nurture and put energy towards those things?
So if our clients feed the wolf of rumination and worry, that's the wolf that will take over. That's why we need to give them something that feeds the opposing side. A little bit later in this video, you'll hear the key ways that a client can change their relationship to anxiety and feed that good wolf. But before we get to those, let's go back to Shelley. When working with anxiety, she often uses what she calls the four core strategies. These are specific methods for helping clients manage stress and anxiety.
So the first one is in relationship to what I was just sharing, and it's called the FACTS, right? F-A-C-T-S, foundational attention centering techniques, right? So the FACTS. So these are things like meditation and breathing and visualization. So these are strategies for clients to focus their attention in different ways. And I think these are skills that can be learned, and particularly for people who have a lot of anxiety, being able to ground ourselves in the present, in our bodies, in our breathing, in a symbol, a visualization, a symbol, in even a mantra, some type of saying that is centering and meaningful to people. So that one set of the core four strategies, again, are the FACTS, foundational attention centering techniques, right? And then the next cluster of techniques that I think is helpful for anxiety are the expressive creative strategies. So how can people find avenues for expression, helping people identify whether it's, expressive arts kinds of things, drawing, painting, finding expression for the turmoil that's inside, active creative activities, problem solving in terms of inventing something or fixing something even, but where the attention is on using cognitive processes in the service of creativity, right? Creating arts, as well as, daily things, fixing a car, working on a car, having those kinds of outlets. So creative, expressive strategies, physical movement, dance, sports, athletics, things where we are engaging in expression. So that's the second. The third is reflection exploration strategies. Right. So another set of techniques for managing anxiety would be, as I mentioned with the other question, journaling, writing, avenues for reflection, where we can take a step back and get a little observing self activated. Right? Really ask ourselves questions about what am I thinking? What am I feeling? Self-monitoring. When do these things come up? What triggers my anxiety? So the reflection exploration is about getting to know yourself better. Any strategy that can help you be aware of, again, the triggers, to be aware of the thoughts and the feelings. That could also involve dialogue, talking with someone, having a sounding board for one's thoughts and feelings. Again, reflection. Reading, learning, reading articles, getting informed, that gives you a stimulus for reflection, right? So the first three, the FACTS, the foundational attention-centering techniques, the expressive creative strategies, the reflection exploration strategies. And then the fourth are what I call healthy lifestyle and values congruent self-care. Right? So there we're looking at kind of four areas of turning your attention. And again, all of these kind of have the commonality of where we put our attention. So turning our attention to healthy habits, right? Healthy relationships, healthy pleasures, healthy world, right? So what kind of healthy habits can we develop? The healthy habits of that relate to diet, nutrition, exercise, all of those things help with anxiety management as well. Healthy relationships, healthy pleasures.
So as Shelley explains here, there are four sets of strategies that can help someone manage anxiety in a positive and empowering way. First, there are the foundational attention centering techniques, the FACTS. These include the strategies that help a client focus on their attention on something other than anxiety. Second, there are the expressive creative strategies, drawing, dancing, fixing a car, anything that helps a client express what's going on inside. Third, there are the reflection exploration strategies that help clients become observers of their own thoughts. And fourth, there are healthy lifestyle and values that are critical in self-care. Each of these can be helpful because they highlight what's meaningful in the client's life. This is important because it shifts their relationship with anxiety away from fear and worry. But what if these strategies become a crutch? We'll dig into how strategies meant to empower clients can actually turn problematic coming up in Module 5 with Dr. Sue Johnson. But for now, let's look at how Shelley used one of her four core strategies to help a client manage anxiety.
So one of the clients that I think about with anxiety is a young woman who was pregnant when she came to see me. She was about, I think she was about 29, late 20s, and I had just broken up with the man who was the father of her child. And the breakup was public. And by that I mean it was a social media event within her social media setting. So there was a lot of Twitter posts and Facebook discussions among her extensive social network on Facebook and Twitter. And much of her anxiety when she came in was sort of just playing over and over and over again things that her social network had posted on Facebook, on Twitter, sort of criticizing her and for letting him go because he was such a great person and those sorts of things. So she was kind of really trying to manage the grief and loss of the breakup, but also much of her anxiety symptoms had to do with this rumination, right? This rumination of things she had posted or things others had posted. So if we kind of circle back around to some of the strategies I talked about, the centering sort of goal was to help redirect her focus away from sort of ruminating on the past through all, you know, and again, the target for her was social media, and to kind of give her some strategies to adjust her focus, to redirect her focus.
So Shelley used some of the FACTS strategies to help her client figure out what would be most useful to her. Shelley started with mindfulness, which is often a go-to practice to help clients find meaning. But Shelley soon discovered that her client wasn't a big fan of mindfulness for a very personal reason.
One of the reasons it wasn't working for her was religious in that she felt like it. And she was a Christian. She identified as a Christian woman. And for her, it felt in contrast to her Christianity, She felt that mindfulness was related to, you know, a religion that didn't center for her exist in her belief system. And so she really rejected mindfulness. And that was fine, right? So we didn't, one of the things that I think is real important with, again, with any strategy is appreciating the cultural context, appreciating that one size does not fit all, right? So how we use the techniques in the context of cultural diversity, this is an African-American woman, is very, very important. So we looked at, well, what are we trying to do? We're trying to give you some strategies to feel a bit more regulated in terms of what happens with your mind. She felt like her mind was just out of her control. Right. So looking at things like one of the things that was useful for her was using music as a regulating strategy. So we played around with different songs and beats so that rather than sort of the mindfulness strategy of the breath, we talked about finding the rhythm and finding the beat. And just being connected to the beat in the song as a way of kind of redirecting her attention, right? So it's a grounding strategy, right? So rather than you know, there's some songs that have a very kind of rhythmic beat that you can, you know, kind of serves the same function as using the breath, right? So that you can, you know, when your attention wanders, come back to the beat, come back to the rhythm, come back to that ongoing part of the song that is grounded. So that's kind of not just an example of a fact strategy, but how we might adjust the work that we do to be congruent with a client's culture and values, so that it didn't feel threatening to her religious beliefs, do a focusing activity that wasn't called mindfulness. So again, one piece of the work was helping her with those ameliorative functions. How can I, when I'm starting to feel myself out of control, what can I use for grounding? What can I use for focusing to redirect my attention away from the rumination? And so that's an example there. She, you know, was an amazing journaler, right? So that was a strength she brought in already. But that reflection exploration, we worked, you know, with a lot of her writing. She actually also wrote songs and poetry, right? It was a meeting of the creative expressive as well as the reflection and exploration. So she was able to spend time writing some music, writing some poetry that helped her kind of get that observing self and do some reflection of what her, you know, what her processes were emotionally.
Shelley's story is just one more reminder of why it's important to have a variety of strategies at our disposal. In just a few moments, we'll explore this area further with Dr. Rick Hansen. But before we get to that, I want to circle back to something I mentioned earlier. At the beginning of this module, Shelley talked about helping clients change their relationship to anxiety, and I promised to share more specific ways to foster this kind of shift. So to explain, here's Dr. Kelly McGonigal.
It's the way that you relate to anxiety. You can actually just go down the list of all of the ways that you respond once anxiety has come up. So one of the first ways you can change your relationship is to change your initial interpretation of what it means that you're feeling anxious. Most people's initial interpretation of anxiety is something really is wrong, or something really bad is going to happen, or there's something really wrong with me, I don't belong here. And one possible other interpretation is this anxiety is arising because I care about this. I care about this person, I care about the situation. There are other possible interpretations, this is a moment that matters, or anxiety is arising because anxiety is how I do life. I mean, there's a lot of different interpretations you could have, but that's one relationship you can change. That very first thing you say to yourself about what you believe it means. You can also change your habits of behavior, which is the sort of the non-avoidance. If you know that when you feel anxious, the first thing you do is you try to escape it by avoiding the cause of the anxiety. Maybe you start to work on that behavior, that habit. Maybe you notice when that's not possible, you try to numb what you're feeling with a drink or with food. Maybe you start to change that habit. You can also change your relationship to your anxious self, that you can have more compassion for the part of you who is anxious, rather than feel like if you were the right kind of person, you wouldn't have anxiety. There's something wrong with you. There's something wrong with your brain, that sort of broken brain model of anxiety. And you can also develop different breaks for the anxiety. So what do you do when the anxiety feels like it's spiraling out of control? Most people's attempts to break it, it's avoidance, or it's this kind of control coping where people have rituals where if they do something, they can make themselves feel better. And I'd mentioned that in dysfunctional anxiety, often people are insensitive to safety or support cues. So something that you can change your relationship to is when you're trying to put a brake on the anxiety spiraling out of control, you can maybe think about attending to safety cues or support cues. In this moment, are you safe? Are you breathing? Who supports you? Who cares about you? The resources that I know we're going to talk about, that there's a lot of other things you can use as breaks to the system spiraling out of control. So those are all things that are, I would consider, part of your relationship to anxiety. And the great thing, as we've been talking about, is when you change these things, you really do change your experience of anxiety. And sometimes the anxiety goes away. Sometimes it doesn't. But you have so much more freedom and flexibility in response to the anxiety.
What Kelly just shared relates to what Shelley pointed out at the beginning of this module. Working with anxiety is about making meaning from it. We can help clients do that by looking at their responses to anxiety. What do they tell themselves about anxiety? How do they behave because of anxiety? How do they care for themselves when they're anxious? And what do they do to slow the spiral of anxiety? All of these are choice points that can move the frame from worry to ease. But let's circle back now to what Shelley said earlier about taking a client's culture and background into consideration. Here's Dr. Rick Hansen with his take.
For me, it's of course always important to be careful that we're not play acting or being subtly condescending in some way, that really comes from an authentic place. But finding the ways in which for a person, perhaps their faith tradition or their cultural background, that they can come at something that is not my own faith tradition, say, or not my own cultural background, but I can get inside their way of looking at it and then build out from there, I found that very, very helpful. And frankly, as more and more research is showing, even though psychology as a profession has tended to stay away from religion and spirituality, out of wanting to seem scientific and so forth, there's increasingly a recognition that for many, many people, a whole collection of primary and useful resources lives inside their religious background and their current religious practice. And being able, we don't have to pretend to be ministers or religious professionals ourselves to recognize that that is a psychological resource that we can draw upon with respect from the inside out with that particular person. And that's for me been both personally interesting because it's prodded me to cast loose of my familiar moorings and enter really the world of another person, and also be more resourceful ourselves to realize that there are plenty of resources inside the mind of a client that we might not have thought of because they come from outside our own frame of reference.
When we're working with clients to make meaning out of anxiety, we need to be connected to what's meaningful for them. With a firm base in what's most important to them, we can use strategies to help our clients begin to make incremental but vital shifts towards healing. In this next module, we'll explore the variables that we can often manipulate to help clients change the equation of anxiety. I'll see you there.